Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 24 in C minor, the Larghetto, and we're playing that for very good reason this afternoon. It was a week ago tonight that Víkingur Ólafsson performed that piece with the Toronto Symphony Orchestra, and the superstar Icelandic pianist is about to join us for the hour to talk about what we just heard, his award-winning association with Deutsche Grammophon, and his very busy concert career. It is the Oasis here on the New Classical FM in Toronto, Cobourg, Collingwood, all points in between within southern Ontario and western New York, across the globe at the website classicalfm.ca. Welcome to the program. My name is Mark Wigmore here on a Wednesday. We'll get to a traffic and weather update for you shortly. But we are here to welcome our very special guest over this next hour. It is Víkingur Ólafsson. The Icelandic pianist is enjoying a moment as one of the leading concert pianists in the world, a brilliant recording artist for Deutsche Grammophon, and along the way, winning awards and accolades from major organizations, the press, and fans alike. And that includes Music Magazine Artist of the Year, Grammophon Artist of the Year, the Rolf Schock Prize for Music. His recordings consistently land on major classical charts around the globe. I would also flag him as one of the pioneers of the modern sequel album phenomenon. Bach and Bach reworks, Debussy Rameau and Reflections, From Afar and From Afar reworks. The original recordings are always fascinating and high quality, but I will admit I'm always curious about his sequel records as well, and so we're going to put a little bit of focus on several of those recordings this hour. Víkingur Ólafsson, it's just a real pleasure. Welcome to the New Classical FM.
Thank you, Mark. Really happy to be here.
Great to be with you. You were recently with us, our host, Kathleen Kajioka. She has an Icelandic background as well, so the two of you had lots to talk about. That interview, by the way, is at classicalfm.ca. Before we get into all the great records this hour, maybe just a few words on Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 24, because you've been busy with that piece with the TSO.
Yeah, I mean, that is... Well, there's no greater concerto, to speak in cliches, but it is an unbelievable
wow.
It's an unbelievable work of art. And I think what fascinates me about this piece is that it seems to bring together like three different sort of eras of music in one piece. So you have the first movement that very much looks forward to Beethoven with all of this Sturm und Drang. It's a huge kind of movement. It sort of opens the door to the Romantic Piano Concerto. You have the second movement, which is resting so beautifully in the here and now, just a simple, fantastic classical romanza. And then you have this incredible, incredible third movement that really looks back to my guy, Johann Sebastian Bach.
Right.
It's almost like a rendezvous that Mozart is having with Bach. You know, he was obsessed with Bach for the last 10 years of his life. And absolutely, this music is so hard to sort of locate in time. It's totally, I would say, as anachronistic as anything that Mozart ever wrote. But more than that, I mean, the piece is so intensely personal, so deeply tragic. It was Beethoven's favorite concerto, for instance, of wow. Mozart's, you know. Wow. Brahms loved it too, and it's been one of the most influential works in the whole repertoire. To play it is also very personal because you have this kind of rapport with different members of the orchestra. Toronto Symphony is a beautiful group of players, and Gustavo Gimeno, the music director, is one of my very good friends. So it's been a very, very beautiful week here.
I love it. And I like that you just mentioned Bach and underlined there. We do have a lot to talk about, but we're going to start with something from one of your Bach recordings. You had the early Bach Chopin album before you signed with Deutsche Grammophon, and then the two big award-winning recordings in 2018, 2019. Is Bach repertoire your favorite place to be? It feels like it could be.
Yeah, I mean, Bach is the Shakespeare of music. He is the one composer I think I've never heard any other of the great composers say a negative thing about. People disagree even about Mozart and about Beethoven's genius, but Bach, it's a little bit like criticizing.
Our own Glenn Gould, of course.
Yeah,
he
didn't have anything negative to say about Bach, for instance.
No, he
but
did
he
not.
Certainly
yeah.
had a few things about all the others.
Mozart, sure.
And I guess we all should look to the past through a critical lens. There's no need to assume that everything in classical music is sacred. It certainly isn't. And pieces of Mozart and concertos, for instance, are of varying quality. And it's okay to say that. But Bach, somehow, that question never arises because the music is somehow different. There's another kind of logic to it.
I was watching one of these space documentaries, and they were suggesting how gravity actually starts to pull not only our planet together, but galaxies and different solar systems revolve around. And every time I think about that, I just think of Bach.
Yesterday I was practicing on Glenn Gould's piano at Roy Thomson Hall, the Yamaha he made the second Goldberg variation recording on. the second studio recording, and I was thinking about this, you know, what is this music? I mean, what does it do? When I was practicing the Goldberg variations, of course, on this piano.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, how can you do from an aria and then these 30 variations and then the return of the aria? How can you do this? How can you use this simple fabric and then create these 30 microcosmos that really take you in on the poetic level, like the narrative level? It's never overshadowed by the intense logic, yet the logic and the sort of mathematical sort of equations this music has is so perfect, but it's never the focus point. The focus point is always the narrative and the story.
Yeah.
And that is Bach's genius. You know, that's the one thing that is the enigma. That's what we don't understand still today. How could he combine sort of the loss of the universe, the loss of physics, and at the same time do something that moves us so profoundly on the poetic and spiritual level?
And Johann Sebastian Bach comes out, you follow it with Bach Reworks. And this idea of getting composers to reimagine the material is born, and something that you've done a couple of times. And I mean, I take us back to that moment where you decided to actually invest in that idea.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I was growing up, I liked to compose, and I would compose. And, you know, I could do it. And I think I tried to approach the music I then interpret from a composer's perspective. I try to understand the sort of the bricks and the building material of the pieces, the architecture, the things, you know, in the background, to understand that as well as the sort of poetic content, to make those things come together. But then I've always been interested in reversing that process. So basically giving my interpretation of other people's music to composers so they can actually use my interpretation as material for new works, if that makes any sense.
It does. And I just love it. It's sort of a deconstruction of, you know, this first idea, right? Like we have the composition and then your interpretation and then we give it to somebody else yet again.
It's just a chain you keep going in that way, you know. And it's something that I have always, you know, loved. And I think I've also always been sort of taken by other composers or composers' arrangement transcriptions, you know, ways of reworking music. Take, for instance, Rachmaninoff and the way he reconstructs Bach.
Sure.
Often in his sort of romantic virtuoso piano language, but also sometimes almost brings Bach to a beautiful salon like it does with the E major partita. You know, there's one track on my old Bach album which really sounds like Rachmaninoff having a jam session on Bach, and it's still completely authentic, you know, as Bach, but it's certainly a meeting between Bach and Rachmaninoff. So that meeting point is what I'm interested in. And actually just exploring the new mediums, you know, I love, you know, the potential of the studio and the potential of electronic music. And I'm not a producer or an electronic musician, although, you know, I like to just go, you know, to the mixer like a child likes to go to the kindergarten and just to the playground. But it's really interesting to see what you can actually do today in that way. And I think there have been just new windows opening, and still every year, more and more windows into how you can rethink old music through that medium.
I think you've worked really, really well in the studio. And we're going to talk about that a little later. Let's listen. Johann Sebastian Bach. We'll go back to one of these earlier records here on the New Classical FM. Our special guest is Víkingur Ólafsson.
Thank you.
play performance from Víkingur Ólafsson and a record that really put him on the classical map in 2018, Johann Sebastian Bach. And it's a Wednesday afternoon. My name is Mark Wigmore. If you are just joining us on the program, very special guest, award-winning Icelandic pianist Víkingur Ólafsson, and our guest for the hour, his album From Afar and From Afar Reworks have both been integral parts of our playlist over the last year, and we're putting special attention on his pairings of recordings today. Víkingur, that's where we're headed, a Mozart on your From Afar recording from last year. So as we get ready to hear that record and the new one, what was the thinking that went into From Afar? Because it was a very personal with classical masterpieces, but also folk melodies, some new music. Tell us about what this project is all about.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wanted to escape myself a little bit. I mean, escape the idea of taking a huge subject like doing the Mozart album or Bach album or something that's sort of taking these iconic composers and doing one album to explore them.
Because you had done that before.
Because I had been doing that. Yeah. And Debussy Rameau was another one where I was exploring, you know, sort of the connection between those two.
That is my favorite. We'll talk about it later.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful record.
But I wanted to get away from those kind of iconic subject matters and just sort of find a way of recording and releasing music that I had been hoping to release for years. And I eventually, I mean, I have a much longer list than this album, you know, but eventually I found the narrative for myself. I started to explore my own musical upbringing, you know, music from Iceland, folk songs, and all the things, and then sort of composers who have been sort of key in my own development as a musician, certainly Bach, Mozart, Schumann, actually, Brahms, you know, some composers I haven't been recording very much or playing, but things that are really sort of make up my musical DNA. And more than that, I connected it to my musical hero, Georgi Kurtak, who at the age of 97 is still very much alive and very much composing in Budapest. I just saw him like 10 days ago,
wow.
Actually. Yeah. So in a way, From Afar was my kind of musical love letter to that incredible man, Georgi Kurtak. I can't find the right words to sort of send him a fan letter, so I decided to send him a fan letter in the form of an album, really. So it's my way of telling him my musical life story through these pieces.
We're about to hear music from From Afar and From Afar Reworks. By the way, I'll just give you a pro tip here as somebody who deals with a lot of new records arriving on his desk. Schumann and Brahms, we've got a lot lately. Everybody is recording Schumann and Brahms, specifically Clara Schumann as well. So keep that in mind as you're working forward. You're with the New Classical FM. Thank you. Beaker Olufsen in performance, and the album is From Afar, a chart topper all around the world in 2022. Music from Mozart there, very, very beautiful. You are with the New Classical FM. And our special guest this afternoon, the great Beaker Olufsen, Music Magazine Gramophone Artist of the Year, and the Icelandic talent is the highlight of orchestral seasons all over the world, here in Toronto with the TSO, but with the New York, Cleveland, and LA Philharmonics, the Berlin Phil, the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra, the London and Czech Philharmonics. The list goes on. Iceland, of course. And his yellow label career was underway in 2017 with Philip Glass Piano Works, and then a major series of releases and sequels, Bach and Bach Reworks, Debussy Rameau and Reflections, and most recently From Afar and From Afar Reworks. And we just heard From Afar, and we're about to get to the reworks in a moment. This is a real treat. Thank you for being with us.
Listening to all these, everything you just said makes me sound like I think I've been busy.
Well, it seems like
it's a long list of things. I get dizzy thinking about all this, yeah.
I'm so glad you're here, and we're just such fans. I'm just a real fan, so it's just a really special to have you here. When you signed with Deutsche Grammophon, the yellow label, there was a lot of attention on the Philip Glass record, which we play all the time here on the station, 2017. And the moniker was the Glenn Gould of Iceland at that time.
Sacrilegious thing to say here
Canadian,
in Toronto.
Canadian connection, very much. I mean, along with the knowledge and skill and intuition that you need to be on the world stage, you also need to define yourself as a player. And so what have those elements been for you?
You know, I think the most important part of any artist's career or life in music is the years immediately following your studies. So in classical music, we sort of start having lessons at the age of whatever, 4, 5, 6, whenever you start learning your instrument. Yeah. And you have a lesson maybe once or twice a week until you're, 22, 23, 24, even older. But anyway, you always have that situation of a master or a maestro, and then yourself. And you're sort of always taking messages about how to do things, instructions from somebody else. And then you have to have that gradual transition that you become your own teacher, and the music becomes your teacher, and perhaps Johann Sebastian Bach becomes your teacher.
Yeah.
So I think actually like finding your voice in music has to happen gradually, and it has to also happen with the aid of your teachers, but that's sort of a rare thing, because in a way the teacher has to work against his or her role in music. I mean, they have to work against themselves by making themselves not needed anymore. Very few teachers actually manage to do that successfully. So very often, you know, people are quite lost when they're done with conservatory finally, you know, and, you know, they might enter the competition route and then try to play music that they've been taught, you know, previous years in the conservatory to please a committee of jury members. And it's a problematic thing. I think we have to think about it again, how we can encourage individuality post-college, post-conservatory. So I think for me, that was the most crucial time in my life to find myself and figure out how I wanted to make music. I had incredible teachers, so I really don't want to make it sound like I'm not giving them credit, because I had learned so much from the people who taught me from the age of 4 to 24. But since then, I haven't had a single lesson except with Johann Sebastian Bach and with the microphone, because, you know, you learn from recording yourself and listening critically to yourself, you know, throughout and in your professional life. So in a sense, I think I had 3 years of no career, nothing. I mean, and nobody knew me. And I was living in Oxford with my girlfriend, who's now my wife.
Right.
But this is 2008 to 2011. You know, we had a piano and in a tiny studio, a grand piano, little piano, nothing else. And she would write her essays and I would be practicing the piano right next to her desk. And it was kind of a magical time that, you know, she didn't break up with me. I was practicing Bartok Sonata and all sorts of things, you know, playing my 6 hours a day. But in those years, I think I sort of gradually found my voice more and more and more, how exactly I wanted to make music and how I wanted the piano to speak and what kind of a dialogue I wanted to have with the piano and with the tradition and with dead composers as well as the living ones, you know.
It's exciting. You know, I think it's just an exciting time for somebody like you when you're spending that much time and you're making those discoveries. But it's also this slight leap of faith to go out into the world and say, here's how I'm going to present these pieces.
Yeah, it's also, I come from sort of the middle of nowhere. I come from Iceland, you know, and there was no network for me. There was no one to introduce me to anyone else. So everything happened extremely slowly for me and extremely gradually. And I was playing concerts for like 50 people in the middle of nowhere in Sweden somewhere, you know, for literally no money.
I think Kathleen Kajioka maybe remembers those times.
Yeah, it's interesting. I play, but I would always try to play those concerts as if they would be my Carnegie Hall debut. And I would really try to play as if my life depended on it, whether it was for 10 or 20 or 50 people or 200, you know. It was extremely gradual, but, you know, a lot of seeds being sown here and there. And then, you know, there came a breakthrough at some point. I moved to Berlin and started playing these kind of...
Always bands. A good move for
yeah,
a musician.
Not always, but sometimes. And I started to play those underground concerts in Berlin. I started to have a real following there. And that's, I think, where Deutsche Grammophon sort of heard about me.
Right.
And then they actually heard me play the Goldberg Variations. And that was sort of the beginning of that. And then signed me to actually record Philip Glass and some other things. But the funny thing is that then you sort of become... sort of famous overnight, or not famous, but noted. And then everyone sort of almost accuses you of your rapid rise to
right.
success. I always pointed out that I actually thought my path was always the slowest.
Right.
You know, because I was quite not 20 or 18 years old like so many who have that recognition, but rather it was my early 30s when I started with Deutsche Grammophon.
Absolutely. And we have a lot of much younger pianists on a bigger platform than that. So I think that's a good story for people to hear. Let's talk about From Afar Reworks. It is recently out. It was the template, basically the same as Bach Reworks. Did you want to work it the same way?
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing, you know. So you've done with the album, and then you do a sister or a brother album.
Yeah.
Basically, with my A&R person at Deutsche Grammophon, Christian Batsura, we basically have a creative discussion. Listen to music and decide whom we want to.
And he's a part of this record, right?
Yes, he's done a song, absolutely, very beautiful song. So we basically decide whom to approach and hopefully invite to basically take my recording, any of their absolutely free choice, and do whatever they want, sort of give the music away to them. And I basically have to do nothing. then they do their work, and if they want, and sometimes I do a little bit of playing and recording for them if they want, but often they don't even need that because they have all the material from my previous album, From Afar, or the original.
The stems, if you will.
The stems,
yeah. That's right.
So in a way, I did some playing, especially for a song called Reverie, that I think is extremely beautiful, actually, on this album. It's a rethinking of Schumann's Träumerei. So in a way, it's a fairly rewarding process for me because it doesn't really involve too much work. It's more just inviting people to join the party.
And a fair amount of Icelandic talent here as well.
I always do that. I always like to, remembering my own past and understanding that, you know, there is almost no network of Icelandic musicians. And, you know, I actually very much like to take, also because there is so much versatility and so many different voices there doing different stuff. So it's kind of fun to just go into that scene and see what comes from it. A lot of stuff going on.
We are going to hear what Christian worked on, which is sung after Brahms. And this is the single, if you will, as far as I can tell, and worked with Christian Batsura on this. You also shot a gorgeous video for this particular piece. And so all these gorgeous scenes of the Icelandic countryside. So I don't know if you want to give us a little intro to what we're about to hear.
Yeah, this is a piece that's it's very nostalgic. Christian wrote this, and it's basically using a theme from Brahms' Third Symphony.
It's kind of heartbreaking. It's beautiful. It's haunting. There's a lot going on.
Well, let's see if it breaks your heart.
Yeah, let's do it. Thank you. sung after Brahms and the rework of the original Víkingur Ólafsson recording performance and reworked by composer Christian Badzura. If you are just joining us on the program, our very special guest, award-winning Icelandic pianist Víkingur Ólafsson, is our guest for the hour, and the album From Afar and From Afar reworks have both been very important on our playlist over the last year, and we're putting special attention on his pairings of recordings today. I feel like artists have been borrowing this idea, this sequel album idea. So, do you feel like you can take some ownership of that?
Well, maybe. But I think
it's very common. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah, so. Sure. I mean, that's great because I borrow from so many other people other ideas. So yeah. So I'm actually it's a musical ecosystem that I think is very connected. So, you know, if that would offend me in any way, that would be very hypocritical because I gain so much from other people's ideas in other ways.
Right.
So no, absolutely. But I do think you're onto something, but I shouldn't say much about it.
Right. That's fair enough. Smartly said. Víkingur Ólafsson, my personal favorite, is coming up next. Debussy, Rameau, and Reflections. Music from the wonderful French composer Conversation, put together by Deutsche Grammophon and Víkingur Ólafsson. Debussy, Rameau, and my name is Mark Wigmore, here with you on a Wednesday afternoon. We continue to welcome our very special guest this hour, Víkingur Ólafsson. The Icelandic pianist is enjoying certainly a moment as one of the leading concert pianists on planet Earth, a brilliant recording artist for Deutsche Grammophon, along the way winning awards and accolades from major organizations. That includes Music Magazine Artist of the Year, Grammophon Artist of the Year, more recently the Rolf Schock Prize for Music, and his recordings consistently landing on major classical charts around the world. I would also flag him as one of the pioneers of the modern sequel album phenomenon. We've been talking about it over the last hour, and we're about to get into it again. Víkingur Ólafsson, welcome back to the New Classical FM.
Thank you, Mark.
So let's go back to March 2020. This record's so important to me as the pandemic got underway. hauntingly beautiful. It is Debussy Rameau and a conversation that spans a century between Claude Debussy and Jean-Philippe Rameau. And was that the basic idea for it when you put it together?
That's one of my favorite album ideas I ever had. I had been sort of thinking about that for years. So basically, I am such a fan of Debussy and such a fan of Rameau's music, but I couldn't find a way of having full album with only Debussy or full album with Rameau. I tried, but it just didn't work out for me sonically the way I wanted it to work out as a narrative. And so I rarely put full Debussy albums in, and it's a funny thing to say because he's one of my favorite composers. But somehow I need contrast and I need dialogue with Debussy, and the same with Rameau. So, and then
I can understand that. It becomes like too much icing on a cake or something.
The more I started to think about it and think about those two guys, the more I realized they're actually sort of brothers in art. They have so many things in common, even if they were born 180 years apart.
Right.
Debussy was actually a music journalist for part of his life, and he was one of the toughest critics in the world.
Wow.
He would really sort of massacre other composers.
I think Robert Schumann was a critic as well, right? I guess there's a few critics out there.
I'm really happy those guys are not writing about me. I mean, because back in the day, the voice of critics, it was much tougher than it is today. You know, today when that happens, people have like lawsuits and stuff, you know, like, but like Debussy was really thorny, but he loved Rameau, and he wrote in one place, you know, he was admiring Rameau's art so much, and he says that he's so futuristic that he seems to be our contemporary. And, you know, there's really two centuries, you know, that separated the two guys. And I thought, what if we actually put them in dialogue? And if I do an album where I actually take the most, in my opinion, progressive and you could say maybe futuristic works of Rameau, who was a very anachronistic composer, and then I take sort of Debussy's roots in the Baroque, because they're often overshadowed by Clair de Lune and the idea of Impressionism.
Yeah.
You know, behind all those harmonic inventions and the kind of what we think of as Impressionism, behind that is very often a kind of Baroque structure. And he was a Renaissance man. So I actually thought, what if we focus on the old in Debussy and the new in Rameau and really find a meeting ground? And that became the thing, you know, and I really, you know, during this album, I really felt as if they were both in the room having a dialogue with me. It was really fun.
I remember the New York Times and the New Yorker just praising how it was recorded and the artistry, that sort of crystal clarity you got out of your performance and that French repertoire conversation. I mean, it did feel like this sparkly magic dust was all over that recording. I don't know exactly how you did it.
Well, I'll tell you. Well, you know, you have to play extremely specifically in the studio to get that sound, but you also have to know how to work the studio and the microphones, and you have to be involved in that, you know. And so in a way, you have to do sort of what is impossible. You have to play on a quite an open, bright piano with a lot of overtones.
Sure.
But you have to play it so delicately that it actually works for a microphone that's 50 centimeters away, or just a few feet, you know, 2 or 3 feet. That is the impossible, you know. And that's, I think, what we tried to achieve with my fantastic producer, Christopher Tarnow, who's my age. He's exactly born in the same year, 84, and we've sort of grown up together, and I brought him with me into the Deutsche Grammophon collaboration. So, and we've grown together, and he's taught me so much about the studio. So when you mentioned the sound and the New York Times and the New Yorker praising that, I very often think when I read those things, you know, it's such collaboration, and I just wish that Christopher's name was also included in some of those writings.
Fair enough. And then it's Reflections the next year, which is very much the companion sequel recording, but a little different than the reworks. It feels like you had the same studio session going and thought we had enough material here to keep going.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's the darlings we killed.
Right.
given an afterlife. Yeah. You know, there are certain things that are really like that. And I did some new recordings as well, like just for the album. And
which is nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But I'd say it's more of a classical album, The Reflections. Yeah. It's not quite so reworky as the Bach reworks or the From Afar reworks. But, you know, you can't also repeat yourself. You can't just go through a formula and always sort of,
I agree,
just do the same thing. You always have to sort of rethink the process.
We loved it. And we should note, Reflections released early 2021, and later that year, Mozart and Contemporaries. And so you have been very, very busy, Viking Olofsson, or so it seems.
Yes, thank you so much. Thanks for noticing.
This has been a really special hour, and we are such fans, and thank you for all the music. And enjoy Toronto if you have a little bit of extra time on your day off here.
So. Yeah, thank you, Mark. I'm looking forward to coming back in February with the Goldberg Variations to Goldberg Town. That's going to be fun. February next year.
And if we had to choose between Mozart and Contemporaries and Reflections, so we'll go back to early 2021 with the Reflections album, Viking Olofsson in performance.
found our way to 4 o'clock. A big thank you to Víkingur Ólafsson, who's been with us as we hear moments of Debussy's Preludes, Book 2. Absolutely gorgeous. And how much fun was that to have Víkingur here for the last hour? Offenbach's Tales of Hoffmann for you, and the latest from Israeli-Canadian cellist Ofra Harnoy.